end of work, please. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of New Mexico.
Please be seated. Good afternoon, everyone. We are here on number S1SC40845, State of New Mexico versus Oscar Rene Sandoval. More specifically, in re Stephen D. Ahrens, an attorney licensed to practice laws in the courts of the State of New Mexico. Can we have appearances, please? Thank you.
Eric Brown, advanced over for the state.
Thank you. Mr. Ahrens, please. You have 20 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court. It's a little comfort to know that my stupidity is what brings us together this afternoon. I really only have 2 points to add to the response that I filed a couple days ago. One, exactly what happened with that brief, and two, what measures might prevent others from repeating my mistake. When a computer generated an unofficial transcript of the trial and I handed that transcript, the record proper, the statement of issues, and some of the discovery over to ChatGPT-03, I assumed that it generated a bulletproof summary of proceedings, not as the Tenth Circuit described in last month's Litchfield decision, hallucinated falsities, quote unquote, in this case several witnesses who were never called at trial, and one witness who was called, but the brief got the name wrong. The argument section of the brief is somewhat different from Litchfield and many of the other cases dealing with this. In most of them, the problem is non-existent cases in the argument section.
Can I back you up?
Sure.
You say you assumed ChatGPT-3 created an accurate statement of the proceedings.
Correct.
What was that based on?
Well, just knowledge that, for example, law firms have put in hundreds of thousands of pages of discovery and produced bulletproof summaries of what that evidence would be.
Is that personal experience or anecdotal experience, or is that just conversation here and there?
I mean, I was using it and hadn't had a problem. I didn't put that amount in. I know just conversational, I suppose, in my brain that doctors have been loading DNA profiles. There may be over 1 million now, and the purpose is to see genetic markers to diagnose and cure rare diseases.
So, counsel, do you watch the news? Do you listen to the radio? Do you read anything about what's going on in the world? Because the problem with lawyers relying on AI and hallucinations is an above-the-fold story every single day. So either you have buried your head in the sand, and that's a choice to do that, an intentional choice to be uninformed, or you took a gamble, and neither of those are consistent with the code of conduct. And so I'm really struggling with your response saying, well, I didn't understand, I didn't know about hallucinations. My 13-year-old nephew knows about hallucinations. My 75-year-old stepmother knows about hallucinations. So either you made a decision not to be aware of what's happening in the world in using this tool appropriately, or which is a willful choice, or you decided to roll the dice. And I don't know which one of those it is, but it probably doesn't matter.
Perhaps it doesn't. I would say perhaps the former. I'd also point out that this is a year ago. I mean, a lot has come out in the last year. The arguments section, again, is different because these other cases dealt with non-existent cases or cases that stood for a different proposition.
I disagree with you. The candor, the rules about the candor towards the tribunal, that's the one that bothers me the most. There's at least 8 or 9 provisions in the code of conduct that you've violated. But the candor to the tribunal applies with equal force, whether it's the facts or the law. And there is no support for what you did, and I don't think it's a material distinction between saying there's a case called State versus Smith and it stands for X and there's no such thing. That candor to the tribunal extends with equal force to the statement of the facts.
I agree. I should point out that I had previously quoted State versus Manos. It's sort of a touchstone for defense counsel. And in the first draft, I did quote it properly. Chad and I were fine-tuning the brief, improving the grammar, breaking up long sentences, and apparently it rewrote the Manos language. The correct language was, quote, "The purpose of discovery in a criminal case, indeed the purpose of a trial itself, is to ascertain the truth." 93 New Mexico at 103. Footnote 10, however, cites Manos paragraph 17, quote, "The purpose of discovery is to eliminate surprise or trial by ambush," unquote. Now, I did not want to dilute a perfectly good quotation with a paraphrase and leave it in quotation, but there you have it.
Can I ask you, I definitely have known for a very long time there's hallucinations, but I have not used this ChatGPT-3 at the level you clearly have. What I'm hearing you say is, I'm just trying to understand, did you put information in it and request a transcript of the testimony? And separately, did you put your brief in it and ask it basically to edit your brief? Were there two, did you use it in two different ways?
Yes. I should point out that the unofficial transcript was not ChatGPT. That was a rev.com. But it's a similar sort of thing. It's able to translate or transcribe from an audio that has timestamps.
So did you then personally check the record to make sure that this transcript you created was accurate?
The transcript is accurate. I checked again to get ready. It is reasonably accurate. There's a couple of sentences that might have been different.
Do you know that now?
No, I...
Or did you do it like you used... Not you. Okay. Before all this was created, you would look at the transcript. The facts would be based on that, then you would argue the law to the facts. Is your answer to Justice Moore that you now are comfortable that the transcript's accurate? Did you confirm it at the time?
I believe I did confirm it at the time. The problem wasn't in the transcript. It was when I loaded it and all the other information in and a summary of proceedings very similar to the final version that had the errors is what came out.
And did you check the brief you filed with this court before filing it to make sure that it was accurate?
To make sure it was accurate, I didn't check the transcript against the summary of proceedings. That's where my error was. I just point out that. I'd like to look at three remedies the court might consider to alert others before they repeat my mistake. And maybe everyone knew about this before I did. I didn't I didn't get that sense. The first is to follow the lead of Margaret Strickland, a former defense colleague out of Las Cruces, who in this year has been receiving so much of this that she issued a standing order requiring that all briefs filed in her courtroom must contain a certificate of compliance setting forth whether counsel relied on AI, and if so,
what difference does that make?
It makes no difference.
See, speaking for myself, there's nothing wrong with relying or using AI to assist in writing a statement of facts or writing a legal argument. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with using a law student to help you write a brief. But when you put your name on that brief and you file it, you're attesting that you have checked that brief and it is accurate. So it's not the question of using it or not using it. It's that you have fulfilled your obligation as an attorney to say, I checked this out, and to the best of my knowledge and the best of my ability, and even there, mistakes can be made. But you checked it out. You've checked the cases. You've checked the facts. You've checked the citations. And you put your name on there. What I'm hearing you did in this case is you uploaded, first of all, you had some kind of an AI to create an unofficial transcript. That was then loaded into a ChatGPT, and that in turn created this brief. And then you looked at things from a readability point of view and editing and so forth, but you didn't check the accuracy.
Well, and
you assumed,
I somewhat agree.
As you said in your first statement to the court, you assumed it created an accurate statement of proceedings,
right,
without checking it.
The only qualification, and it's a footnote, is that that doesn't really apply to the legal side of it, the argument side. I mean, I didn't ask it for...
But these cases are facts and legal. I'm really not accepting this. Is there an officer Amarillo in this case?
I believe there is, but they did not testify at trial.
Okay, that is a fact.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to suppress evidence, it matters what Officer Amarillo did. And if Officer Amarillo doesn't exist, you can sign whatever declaration you want. If a lawyer doesn't look at the record and determine this witness did this, this officer did this, you can sign, I don't care what declarations you sign. It's the duty of the lawyer to confirm the facts to the law.
I understand, Your Honor, but it's a little like potty training a puppy, that if we are required to type a compliance language, in my opinion, this mess would have been avoided.
No, this is using... Assume with me that you had relied on the work of a first-year lawyer that was working for you, and that they had just made stuff up and handed it to you and said, oh yeah, it's all there, it's all in the record, and you signed it, you'd be in the same exact soup you are right now. So the idea that the suggestion in your briefing that because the court didn't tell you at the time that you did this, be careful, it somehow relieves you of obligation, it falls on absolute deaf ears, because the rules of professional conduct already tell you what your obligation is. A paralegal could have drafted something. You didn't look at it, you sign it. Guess what? It's your license. You're the one who signed it, and you're the one that has the obligation under the professional code of conduct. The other thing that's completely missing from your response,
well,
is anything about what this has done to your client. That's who I'm worried about. You have presented briefing to the court that we cannot rely on, and your client is the one suffering because of this, far more than you will ever suffer.
Well, let me talk about a second remedy. The first seminar that I know of came at the bar convention last year where Professor Gibson and William Slees told people, and it reminded me of Mr. Slees doing a couple of other mandatory CLEs where client trust accounts and succession plans were discussed. I think I attended a similar seminar this summer with Professor Gibson, and I can say that after we learned some of the horror stories, I'm confident that those who watch would probably use AI even more, but with greater caution. But perhaps an inoculation like that would prevent people making the same mistake I did. They have been out there. And one of the things I didn't know what to do when the motion to strike came up is how do you deal with it? In Litchfield, they submitted an errata sheet after oral argument. I decided that I should abandon the Deadwood, which, after all, these witnesses were not germane. I don't think it affects the appeal. And MANUS does stand for the proposition in footnote 10, and Lopez as well.
Assuming we think sanctions are appropriate here, I think that's what you were getting at with remedies. Can you, other than the standing order, is there anything else you suggest we do? And particularly the posture that we're in with this brief that's completely inaccurate, for your client's sake.
Well,
what should this court do?
I don't, as for me, I'm not sure. I haven't thought that out, but I will say I was thinking as I was somewhat with trepidation getting ready for this, is that I wish the motion to strike had been granted and gave me a week to fix the errors, or else I certainly would have fixed the errors. The last thing I
need... What did you do in response to the motion to strike?
The court denied the motion fairly quickly, and so...
Did you respond?
Mm-hmm. I didn't respond to the motion.
Did you move to withdraw your pleading? Did you file a notice of errata?
I didn't know to do. What I did was I did file a reply that focused on the issues that didn't mention the witnesses. And frankly, I don't know what the right course of action there. And that's another reason, a topic for a mandatory CLE. The last thing is the remedy may be the simplest is time. People now all know this. I'm not sure they did a year ago. Maybe they did. This epidemic may die on the vine because there are safeguards in the program and other programs to prevent hallucinations. But the court is right. The essential safeguard has to be the fire line, has to be the counsel.
Mr. Ahrens, I'm really interested with the approach you're taking in this hearing. You seem to be telling us all the policy that we've been thinking about for years about what to do with AI, but you're not talking about how to address the situation that's in front of us, which has significant impacts on a criminal defendant who, is he in custody?
He is in custody.
Who is in custody, who's going to stay in custody until we resolve this matter. And I really don't care about the policy concerns right now. I care about what we're going to do with your client and what we should do in this circumstance based on the behavior that you showed us. What should we do?
Well, to me, Your Honor, the issues raised in the briefs and this shortcomings by counsel are somewhat apples and oranges. And it would be, I would ask the court to separate the two. The issues raised are valid issues.
Mr. Ahrens, let me try what I think the Chief Justice was trying to point out to you. The issue is not the legal issues in the case. The issue is not AI per se. The issue, and you started to talk about a firewall, and I was interested in what you were going to say, but that to me is the issue, is that there was no firewall. And the firewall was not there because you didn't double check or check the work of the tool that you use to assist you. That's the issue. And it doesn't matter what the tool is. It doesn't matter how advanced the AI-generated program is or what improvements they make or whatever. It doesn't matter whether you use a C student lawyer or an A student lawyer that you didn't check their work before you filed the brief. That's the issue. And I wish, or I'm hoping, you would focus on that, take responsibility for it, and if you're suggesting remedies, with those factors in mind, suggest your remedies. The remedy is not with AI. The remedy is with a lawyer. Please.
I agree, and I hope I don't present myself as not accepting responsibility. I mean, my only hope is that the mistakes that I made that somehow can prevent someone else down the line from repeating my mistake, because the AI capacity is amazing. But
even whether you're talking about a doctor or any or DNA or whatever, or summarizing volumes of transcripts of depositions, somebody still has to check it. They don't just go and do a clinical trial on cancer or something based upon what AI says without checking out what AI says.
I agree.
Hang on. I have three questions.
Okay.
Sorry, Chief. Are you doing work in this case on a public defender contract?
No.
Or you're private counsel?
I'm private counsel, although I haven't been paid. But it's private.
Not sure that's going to happen.
Right.
Have you disclosed this to your client?
I have not. He's a Spanish speaker, and I wanted to see what happened today.
So he has no say in whether... You've not given him the ability to even think about whether you're the right person to represent him.
Well, I think we have talked. He's somewhat non-communicative. Speak with his sister and his brother.
Hang on, you're not answering my question.
Right.
You have not communicated this to him so that he can make an informed decision. You don't need to answer that because it's readily apparent because you haven't told him.
Right.
And trying to get to the Chief Justice's point and the Senior Justice's point, what should we do to discipline you for your conduct? Everything else is the court should do these things to educate the lawyers. That's what your proposed penalty is here.
No,
what should we do to you?
And there's a part two to that. What should we do to discipline you? What should we do to protect your client?
I don't know. I'm the last person that can say. I feel a little like the criminal defendant who messed up, and it's up to the judge to decide what the appropriate penalty is. I do intend to talk to him about it, and it seems to me that what happens today is a factor in it. He is aware, by the way, of this, even though I didn't directly tell him yet. But
what do you mean by that? He's aware of this.
Well, I've been in touch with his brother, and I guess she isn't a sister; she's a cousin. But they're the ones that hired me, and it's. He's difficult to reach. He's difficult to talk to, but at least...
Wasn't he in prison?
He is in prison.
How are they aware? What are they aware of?
Well, they're aware that there was a problem with the first brief that I filed, and that the court's looking at that. That's pretty much it.
So you didn't say... I relied on ChatGPT and it submitted lies to the court and the court is mad at me and now there's a hearing. I'm guessing you didn't tell your client's family members that.
I didn't talk about ChatGPT. I just said there was a problem with the brief that I filed.
Can I just ask one quick question?
Of course.
Did the client get a copy of the order to show cause?
He has not.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay, we are going to go into recess and attempt to reach a conclusion regarding this matter. If we're able to, we will come back out and announce that decision. If we are not, we will let the clerk know and she will come and tell you. But in the meantime, we'd ask you to please stay close by until you hear from us.
Stand in court, please.
Okay. So the court has conferenced this matter and was able to reach a conclusion. Mr. Ahrens, we appreciate that you admitted that you made a mistake and that you were wrong, but we were very concerned that we did not seem to see much lack of remorse in your presentation. And we didn't see any apparent concern for the circumstances of your client, which causes us significant concern in and of itself. So the court will be referring this matter to the disciplinary board. And while it is with the disciplinary board, you will be banned from appearing in this court. Once that matter, that process is completed, we'll see where we are. We'll consider what should happen next. We find that you are in direct contempt of this court. You will be sanctioned $5,000 that are payable to the Client Protection Fund within 30 days of the date of this order. This case will be referred to the public defender for appointment of counsel. All of the briefing in this matter will be stricken so that everybody has a fresh start. Upon entry of appearance by new counsel, a new briefing schedule will be entered, and the case will proceed with the intention that it will be heard during this term. Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you both. The court will be in recess.